podcast you're about to hear was recorded before Daniel Jones signed his four-year, $190 million contract, and before the Giants tagged Saquon Barkley. So the front half of this podcast was recorded before that. Back half of this podcast, not affected. It's some Iona hoops. So sit back, relax. If you're a Giant fan, rejoice and hear us Monday morning quarterback a situation that didn't happen.
You're listening to the Grind Hours Podcast.
At the wall! See ya! See ya!
Hello and welcome to the Grind Hours Podcast for Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. I have my good friend, former classmate of mine, now radio aficionado, producer, part-time host, fill-in host for NFL Radio, for Odyssey, for CBS Sports Radio, Carlos Ortiz. Carlos, it's been a while, my friend. Oh, I forgot. You're also a co-host on the Four Horsemen of Fantasy.
Oh, podcast. Look at that. See, I almost forgot I was a co-host for that. But thank you for the shameless plug. It has been a while, dude. We're long overdue for a collaboration of sorts, so I was excited when I got the text from you, and I'm always happy to do this. If I ever have time for you, I'm happy to jump on the Grind Hours podcast, the esteemed Grind Hours podcast, which, by the way, pulling back the curtain already, 1 minute into the show, Joe, being modest himself, being an ESPN New York associate producer in his own right, this collaboration technically shouldn't be happening because our employers are direct competitors. But to hell with all that, we throw the lines aside. This is my guy, so I'm always gonna come in and say what's up.
We don't gotta talk about that. That's over in the corner. We don't gotta talk about that.
It's like Bloods and Crips getting along.
So you're my guy. Same here. You're my guy. So I put the radio feud away for both of our respective stations for a minute for my guy. And I don't got nothing but respect for you. And I again, you're a good Giant fan. So let's get off of the inside baseball before Marchand gets an article about ESPN. And
yeah, before we wind up on an awful announcing in like 15 minutes.
Yeah. So your Giants.
Yes.
After being the darling of the NFL last year, they are in a predicament. It is Tuesday morning, 10:41 Eastern time. We have just about a little bit less than 6 hours until the franchise tag deadline. I'm hoping at some point in this podcast that Jones either signs the deal or signs the tag, so we have a little of breaking news. But if you're Joe Shane and company, A, is he worth $40 million? B, what's the contract you're giving him? And C, would you franchise tag him?
So there's a bit to unpack there with all those questions, because this is absolutely priority one for Joe Shane and company with dealing with Daniel Jones here. The Giants are not going to make a big splash in free agency if they have to tag. So I'll kind of answer this in reverse a little bit. If Daniel Jones plays under the franchise tag, that's going to count $32 million against the cap. That's going to be very prohibitive for what the team can do in terms of building a roster around him. It's not impossible, but tagging him would certainly be the least ideal road. I understand you want to be able to kind of kick the bucket down the road for a year and see how he plays, and maybe you can get a better deal for both Jones and for Giants, you know, one season later. But you don't necessarily want to do that because the team has so many needs that it needs to address. So $32 million right off the bat would be a really big deal for the Giants to have to deal with. Now, you get to cut Kenny Golladay, but you have to wait until March 15th, which is going to be the first day of the league year, in order to do so. Mm-hmm. That's going to save $6.5 million. So good, because he was set to count $21.4 million against that cap as if you'd stay on the roster. So you'll have a little bit of flexibility there. But again, tagging Jones wouldn't be the route that I would go unless contract negotiations just go completely left. It's reported, Joe, that Jones is essentially looking for the deal that Kyler Murray got last year with the Cardinals. So we're looking at about $45, $46 million a year. The Cardinals already hate that deal.
Let me ask you this question then.
What's up?
Is Daniel Jones better than Kyler Murray?
Daniel Jones is different from Kyler Murray. Daniel Jones' skill set is different from what Kyler Murray can do. Kyler Murray is much more athletic. Kyler Murray has more vision on the field, believe it or not, despite his size. He can make better plays outside of the pocket than Jones can. However, Jones is legitimately a dual threat quarterback in the league. Jones has a better arm. Jones is smarter with the football. He's gotten smarter with the football. Yeah, Dable and what the coaching staff has been able to do with him this past year is remarkable. But even with such progressions, Daniel Jones only threw 15 touchdowns this year. So you're essentially looking for $3 million per score. I'm not ready to go ahead and fork over all that money. I don't think right now, talent-wise, he's better than Kyler Murray, but he is a better player than Kyler Murray. I'm just not going to pay you Mahomes, Burrow, and an outlier Murray money. If you want that type of contract, if I'm Joe Shane talking to Daniel Jones, you want Patrick Mahomes money, you want Joe Burrow money, you need to show me you're as good as those guys because you're not nearly at the talent of those guys. And that's where the Giants and the Athletes First Agency, which now represents Daniel Jones, that's where the stalemate is. Both sides want to get the deal done. It's just the average annual value. The Giants are looking to hopefully get him around what Derek Carr's getting with the Saints. We're looking at $36 million. I think that's a fair compromise. If they hit him for $38 million a year over 5 years, I can live with that deal. But when you start getting north of 40, that's going to prohibit you from doing the other moves that you need to make in order to make Daniel Jones a better player. So it's a kind of roundabout way to answer your question. Do the Giants franchise him? I think they will if the deal's not done by 3 o'clock. But I don't think it's going to be the exclusive franchise tag. I would dare the Giants to tell Daniel Jones, you know what? Go get the money. Hit the market. Let's see what's out there. I will hit you with the non-exclusive franchise tag. So what the non-exclusive is not that common, Joe. It is a cost-prohibitive move for a new team to sign Daniel Jones under that franchise tag. And what that is Daniel Jones can now negotiate with other teams. He can hit the market. He's essentially a restricted free agent, for lack of better words. Mm-hmm. Go out there, see what the market tells you. If, let's say, the Panthers are crazy enough to give Daniel Jones, I'm going to give him $43 million for 5 years. The Giants say, you know what? Best of luck. See ya. The Panthers will have to sign Daniel Jones, but the Giants will also get 2 first-round picks from the Panthers. Probably not both, obviously, this year. So they'll get the number 9, I believe, is what the Panthers are picking at now. So they'll get that pick, and they'll get next year's first-round pick. So that's a lot for a team to give up for Daniel Jones. And I understand that there's a lot of teams that are looking for quarterbacks, but I don't think you're going to want to see a team give up 2 first-round picks plus $40 million a year. So the Giants can safely tell Jones, see what you can get out there, come back. And if it's under 40 mil, we'll match it.
What's the is the non-exclusive the same as the exclusive
tag? No, number? So the exclusive tag, that would be the automatic 32 right off the bat. So the non-exclusive tag would be about $28 to $30 million. So it's a little bit less than what the exclusive tag will do. But the exclusive means that he will not be able to negotiate with anybody except the Giants. So it keeps their window open for another year. So Daniel Jones will be a Giant should they choose to give him the exclusive tag. The non-exclusive allows him to negotiate with other teams.
No, I agree with you. Non-exclusive him today, right now, and say, if you could go find a better deal,
by all means, because you're not going to find a team that's going to give him $45 million a year.
You're not going to find a team that's going to give him 38, much more than 38. He's not worth that much money. I like Daniel Jones. I do. I was rooted. I said in August, wouldn't it be fun if he had an FU season? And just said, you don't think I'm worth the fifth-year option? I'll prove it to you. And he did. So I'm happy for Daniel Jones. But and I get you can ask for the moon in negotiations. You can. But for everyone that loved Daniel Jones from the playoff run. What this does and what this negotiation does is it ruins his public persona with the fans. Ruins it because he's greedy. He's labeled as greedy. That's why when negotiations get public, for and usually it's for the team. Usually the team is the ones that are seen as greedy, and it's not the the player. It the roles are reversed now. It's the player that's looked at as greedy, and I don't ever want to side with billionaires and teams with this. I don't. But you can't do this, especially with a locker room that is, it seems like they want to fight for Daniel Jones. But
they do love Jones inside that locker room.
But that team, like, if you're a guy making, you know, 10% of what you think you're worth, and then they give Jones $40 million, you're looking at like, hey, whoa, he got that, and I'm better than him. I do more for this team than Daniel Jones. I do, you know, I had 100 tackles. He had 18 touchdown passes. That's not equivalent. Hello? So you kind of fracture, you could, in a way, fracture the locker room. But the other thing, the other reason why I would give him the non-exclusive franchise tag and just kick the can down the road one more year. The quarterback market is going to be reset next year. Burrow is going to get his deal. Hurts is going to get his deal. Mahomes will probably restructure his deal.
Undoubtedly.
Another quarterback we're not even thinking of is going to get a deal.
Justin Herbert's going to be up for a deal soon.
So I would just kick the can down the road and, you know, best of luck to you and see if you can prove it again.
So I'm actually in the opposite mindset of that. And here's why. There's no long-term solution here for the Giants. Both the Giants and Daniel Jones find themselves in a position where they're almost married to each other. Because, as I said, I would dare the Giants to tell Daniel Jones, go find a deal. Because there's not going to be many teams that are going to fork over that kind of money plus the two first-round picks. But in the same token, if the Giants were to move on from Daniel Jones, which is so unlikely to do so, where do they pivot for quarterbacks? They're not bad enough in the draft. And they have a lot of picks this year. They got 11 picks in this year's coming draft. You'd have to mortgage about half of them to jump up a bunch of teams in order to make a move for a quarterback. It's too cost heavy. They won't be able to do that. So if you look at the free agent market, then you're going to be in the same position that you find yourself in if you're the Raiders or the Jets or the Panthers or the Bucks. You know, draft might not necessarily be there, Carolina aside. You're going to be looking at, what, Jimmy Garoppolo, Ryan Tannehill, if he shakes loose from Tennessee. Do you dare want to, you know, try to revive Baker Mayfield's career? No, you're not going to go that route. So the Giants are almost, I don't want to say they're stuck with Daniel Jones because
they're not.
They're not stuck with him. He's 25 years old. He checks a lot of the boxes off. He has shown progression. But look at his stats. 15 touchdowns last year. He only threw 5 picks. So what's been great is since he got into the league, every year he's cut down on interceptions. His rookie year, which he threw the most touchdowns at 24 and over 3,000 yards, he had 12 picks that year. The next year after, he had 10. The next year after, he had 7. Last year, he had 5. So he's protected the ball, and not only just the interceptions, but in the fumbles. The fumbles have cut down tremendously, and his quarterback rating has gone up every year since his rookie year. So you love to see the intangibles and the progression of what Daniel Jones can do in a coaching staff that is competent. He had to deal with an abject failure in Pat Shurmur and the embarrassment of Joe Judge. So now you have him in a room with adults that know how to coach, that come from a good organization in Buffalo, and the offensive system in Kansas City with Mike Kafka, who was the quarterback's coach for the Chiefs, the offensive coordinator here for the Giants. Retaining the coaching staff was huge for Jones believers because now you get another year with the same faces, another year of terminology under your belt to see what the kid can do. I don't think Jones is as greedy as you say. Switching agents, he saw the writing on the wall. Saw that there are teams looking for quarterbacks out here. But switching agents doesn't necessarily mean you're going to scrape and look for every dollar. You said it yourself. You can ask for the moon, but he seems like he's a smart kid. He seems like he wants to stay in the Giants. So he's probably telling his new agent, listen, push, push, see what you can get. But ultimately, if it's close to 4 o'clock, I want you to get a deal done. I think the Giants will make it happen because right now they're the only team that's betting on this. They're right now bidding against themselves. So the Giants want to get the deal done. Jones probably wants to get the deal done. It's just if he comes off the $40 million asking price and goes into the high 30s, the deal will get done. So I'm not too worried about that. Barkley, on the other hand, I would be very worried if you were a fan of Saquon Barkley, but that's a topic for outside of what Daniel Jones can do because Daniel Jones is the priority.
We will talk about Barkley in just a moment here. I want to make one last note about Jones and the quarterback market for the Giants. If you put the non-exclusive tag on Jones, and let's say he goes to Vegas. Vegas wants to give him $42 million a year. And best of luck. Have fun in Vegas. You pivot to the free agent market. If you're Jimmy G, do you want to go to a roster or and a team that is an abject failure every single year? And it's the team that I root for and I die for, the New York Jets? Or do you want to stay in that same building and go to a team that has prestige and the reigning coach of the year?
You really are a Jets fan.
And do you want to go to an organization where the fans will root for you no matter what and won't kill you if you're necessarily that bad? And look at the offensive system that you're walking into. With the Jets, it's a defensive mind. Yes, I know he has a relationship because Robert Saleh was the DC when they went to the Super Bowl. But you have the next offensive guru and Brian Daboll, who he turned chicken salad out of you-know-what with Daniel Jones.
1,000%.
Because nobody, rightfully so, nobody in their right mind would have given Jones the fifth-year option. Now everyone wants to revisionist history in hindsight 2020, and everyone said, well, they should have gave it to him. No bleep. But come on, dude. Nobody, go back and listen to the clips. Go back and read the articles. Nobody was saying that. Nobody. Not a one. And if you call up to any station here in New York, you're a liar and a fool and a clown because you weren't saying that.
Absolutely.
You weren't.
Right.
And if you were, nobody was around to hear it because you're a tree in the middle of the forest.
Listen, not after a 10-7 year where he was an 84% quarterback rating coming out of 2021. So you weren't screaming for a fifth-year option then. Joe, I'm with you. It was an absolute, I don't want to say a miracle, but it was a revelation to see what this kid can do under a real coaching staff. But I'm not going to go crazy and back up a Brinks truck to keep him.
No, I'm not either. That's why I'm saying, if you're Jimmy G, you want to go to the Jets or you want to go to the Giants?
If Jimmy Garoppolo were to wind up on the Giants, fans would revolt. I'm sorry, Joe.
No, they wouldn't.
Jimmy Garoppolo would be a far downgrade from Daniel Jones. Now, this is not to be derogative toward the Jets at all, because I don't have a problem with the Jets. I'm one of those rare Giants fans that, listen, the Jets don't bother me. They're my little brother. Just don't play me.
Because there's no threat.
There's no
Super Bowl. Hey,
I'm not
years.
Concerned with you guys. You guys haven't won a Super Bowl since color TV.
Come on.
But listen, the Jets, their situation's a little unique. They telegraphed it to the world. Once they hired Nathaniel Hackett, it was Aaron Rodgers or bust. Anybody. It didn't matter if it was Carr or Garoppolo or scary Tannehill. I actually think Tannehill is more of a shot to be a Jet than Garoppolo. But let's say if it's any of those guys and it's not Aaron Rodgers, Jets fans do not want to hear it. That is an absolute failure. Fans will revolt. Woody Johnson should sell the team. Robert Saleh will eventually lose his job. This is it for him. Joe Douglas will be out of work by the end of this year if Aaron Rodgers is not under center for the Jets this coming season.
I didn't think we were going to talk Jets.
I didn't either. But you got to pay attention to this market.
Now that we can, I'll spend 2 minutes on this. And then we can go back to the Giants because there's other things that I want to attend to. But with the Jets, I am scared to death of Aaron Rodgers. I want his soap opera and darkness retreat and ayahuasca nowhere near my locker room. Nowhere near. Because he's not going to show up until August. He's not going to go through OTAs. He's not going to go through minicamp. He's going to be screaming at Garrett Wilson for dropping a ball the same way that he screamed at Watson in Green Bay last year.
And he turned out pretty good with that Watson kid.
But still, I don't want that. I don't want that drama. I don't want him to conjure up that locker room with all that negative energy, because he's a diva, and I don't want to deal with him. And frankly, I'll take his words. He's got the answer inside of him. Good. I don't want to hear it, because I'm not following it anymore. I'm sick and tired of him, and he's not even my quarterback yet. I'm sick and tired of him. And Woody Johnson is enthralled with him, wants everything to do with him. He's the big fish that the big game hunting is waiting for. He's what Woody Johnson wants.
He's this decade's Brett Favre, because it's exact mirror of their careers.
Favre's footsteps, yes. And now he's following it to a T. And I don't want anything to do with him.
I'll give you one pro argument before you, and it's hard to cut you off there. I'll give you one pro argument for Rodgers. Despite his drama, despite his nonsense, despite the very Kyrie-esque mentality that he seems to have, he does compete on the field. He does want to win. The talent is still there. Yes, it's not the MVPs, back-to-back MVP season that he had last year, but a lot of that had to do with Devontae Adams going to the Raiders. And he really was working with young guys. Now, these guys are, you know, the young receivers in Watson and Dobbs. They're talented dudes, but they didn't know how to play in the league quite yet. So you could see the writing on the wall with the Packers even before the season started. Rodgers will show up to play. But you're right. You will have to deal with all the other stuff. But if Rodgers can get you to the playoffs, if he could give you one ring, wouldn't it be worth it to just deal with his crap for 2 years?
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing, though. It's the Jets. And maybe I'm just damaged and scarred, but I would need a blood pact from Rodgers for 2 years if I'm going that route.
And you know what? He might do it, too.
The same thing Favre did. The same thing. Oh, I'll be your quarterback. We're going to go on a magical run. They could get off to the exact same start, 8-4. And then Rodgers gets hurt or something happens. And he's like, you know what? Peace. I'm out after 1 year.
He'll go to Minnesota.
I don't want to mortgage this franchise for one season. And yes, if they win a ring, I say this to everybody. No kidding. I would take it, but it is a gamble. You are
very
messing
much so
with the devil. This isn't a Donovan Mitchell situation. This isn't, you know, fill in the blank for another star in any other situation. It's not that. This guy knows exactly what he's doing. He's toying with everyone. He loves it. And I don't want to deal with it. Because there's a guy that I want that is also disgruntled and not getting paid and not getting his due. And the owner in Baltimore doesn't want to pay Lamar Jackson. That's the only reason why he's not franchised.
Ah,
the owner
right.
doesn't want to cough up the money. Well, guess who does want to cough up the money? My owner, Woody Johnson. Send the two picks. Get the deal done. I want Lamar. Because what Lamar is he's Aaron Rodgers, but way younger, way more potential to make it sustainable. Yes, the short-term capital that you're going to have to give up, the two first-round picks, it's going to be a heavy hitter, and you're probably going to give up 2 twos for it too. So you're not going to be able to pick in the draft the next 2 years until the third round. But guess what? Joe Douglas hits on third-round picks. He doesn't hit on first-round picks. Well, he did this year. But he doesn't usually hit on first-round picks. He hits on the later-round picks. He's a grunt work GM. So I trust him in that way. And if you get him a quarterback with a team that actually wants him and an owner that actually wants a superstar, it's a match made in heaven. That is the superstar. That's the quarterback I want. And I've been saying this since August, because I didn't think Lamar was – I thought this whole thing was going to play out the way that it did. I'm right on this one, and I want that guy. I want Lamar, whatever it costs, I don't care. Get Lamar Jackson in New York.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Lamar certainly is going to be the guy if you want to swing for the fences and you want to have not only a short-term and a long-term solution, yeah, I'm going to pony up and pay Lamar Jackson. He's going to get franchise tagged. There is
He's not going to sign it, though.
Well, you know, then he has to go into a Le'Veon Bell situation. Are you willing to forfeit an entire year and go down the bucket like Bell did and not play at all? And we saw what happened with Bell's career after that. It was non-existent.
Too smart. That seems too smart.
I don't think Lamar will sit out an entire year. I think he eventually will relent and play. But I'm with you. If you're Joe Douglas and you have an opportunity to get Lamar from the Ravens, I'm 1,000% picking up the phone call or picking up the phone and saying, hey, what's it going to take to make this happen? If I got to give up two ones, you mentioned two twos. Let's say I think it's going to be two ones for sure, a two and two threes. You give them five picks, I think Baltimore will sign over and get it done. Baltimore does not invest into the offense at all. Under Lamar in his rookie deal, they were 31st, 32nd almost every year in terms of passive efficiency because they don't give him targets. Mark Andrews, who's a tight end, is his best target. The investments they made in wide receivers have been awful. Bateman is always hurt.
$10 million total.
Nothing.
In the wide receiver room.
Sammy Watkins. The ghost of Watkins is an option out there. Devin Duvernay is a nice player. He's a third option. So they've done Lamar no favors on the offensive end. The Jets would be instant contenders with the weapons that they have, and they would not have to give it up. It would just be money and picks to get Lamar in there. You slip Lamar behind a healthy line. Yeah, I don't know what the hell you're going to get out of Mekhi Becton, but if you get Elijah Vera Tucker nice and healthy again, you get a Breece Hall healthy for back from his injury. You get Michael Carter Jr. for another year. You have Garrett Wilson on the one side. I don't know what, probably Corey Davis is going to be moving on, but you're still going to have enough, and Elijah Moore on the other side. I'm sorry. The Jets are easily playoff contenders. Maybe they threaten for the division if they get Lamar in that deal. So I'm with you. I would go after Lamar.
They have the best quarterback in the division.
But you know it's going to happen. The Jets are going to Jets. They're not going to get Lamar. They're not going to get Rodgers.
No, we're going to
Jimmy Garoppolo will be the number one selling jersey in the next couple of weeks for gangrene.
I know it's going to happen. I put this out on Twitter. I'm hoping for Lamar, but I know it's going to be Tannehill or Baker. I know it's going
to
happen.
I feel for you, man. I hope that's not the case.
One last really quick thing. Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. We've lasted this long. I'm exclusive franchise tagging him right now. I'm saying you should, and Barkley should have signed the deal at the trade deadline. He's costing himself money. He should have. And if you're a running back, if you're a player, period, in the NFL, if someone's offering you money in the middle of the season, when has it worked for you to turn it down? When? In the history of the league, when? So, Saquon, I'm sorry, but I'm exclusive franchise tagging you this year. If we can get something done in the middle of the year, great. But I'm not losing Saquon Barkley. I'm not doing it.
That Barkley, is a
to me,
bold,
is
bold
more integral
take.
To this offense than Daniel Jones is, to me.
Joe, I don't think we could be any more opposite on the ends of the spectrum here. Now, this is all completely contingent on what happens with Daniel Jones later today. The Daniel Jones contract or lack thereof is going to completely tell you which way Saquon Barkley is going to go, whether it's with the Giants or with somebody else. If they get the deal done with Jones, Saquon Barkley will be a Giant. Now, will it be under a franchise tag or will it be another deal? That's another conversation. But I'll present a couple of avenues and we can explore the way that you want to go. Daniel Jones gets franchised. Saquon Barkley will walk. The Giants will not be able to afford to keep him. Because a Jones tag, $32 million, is a lot more reasonable for a quarterback than to put a $10.1 million cap hit for a running back when you need a lot of resources to fill some other holes. So to give Barkley a tag would not be the smart move. So the tag is only in play if Daniel Jones is under contract. If they get that deal done with Jones, Barkley will be a Giant. If Jones has to get tagged, Barkley's going to walk, and you know what? I think either way, and I want to preface this by saying that Saquon Barkley has done everything right since joining the team. The only thing that he is guilty of is being a number two overall pick, and that's not his fault.
No.
That is Dave Gettleman falling in love with this guy, saying he's going to be a gold jacket player if we get him. Do you think the Cowboys regretted getting Ezekiel Elliott at four?
Do you think
anybody regrets getting a running back in a top five? Yes, because you don't do it. Look at the last Super Bowl winners. You don't need a prolific running game. Walter Payton's not walking through that door anymore. You can get to the Super Bowl with a guy like Miles Sanders. You can win a Super Bowl with running backs like Isaiah Pacheco, who came out of nowhere from Rutgers. All right, so you're not going to win in this league when the running back is the focal point of your offense. Again, he's done everything right for this team. He has not been an issue off the field. He is a model face for your franchise. He is a gamer when he's healthy. If he's healthy, he's had two season-ending injuries already. His best season, other than last year, was his rookie season. Am I going to pay $14, $15, even $16 million a year for that kind of production with no guarantee? Absolutely not. I think whether or not they franchise Jones or get the deal done with Jones, I'd be kind of hesitant to give Saquon Barkley any long-term money to begin with. And this is somebody that likes Saquon. I really think he's a perfect fit for the Giants. But I'm not going to give you CMC money. Hell, I don't think the 49ers want to give the CMC money. Franchise tag or bust. I will let you play for one more year, pay you the $10.11 million if Daniel Jones is under contract. Other than that, hey, listen, you want to go see what's out there in the market?
More time to get a deal done.
For sure. You want to see what's out there? By all means. But you know, if that's the case, I could certainly pivot to the draft. Bijan Robinson from Texas. Come on down. I would certainly take that kid. If I have to move back up into the end of the first round to get him, I would do it because I think that would be not one for one production, but certainly a solid backup option if Barkley were to walk. Barkley, his future is far more cloudy than Daniel Jones. I definitely see several paths for Daniel Jones to remain a Giant. Barkley, it's one, and it's the franchise tag.
I would franchise tag him now, and here's the reason why. Because if he walks and you sign Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones is walking into that facility tomorrow morning. Who do you got in your skill position rooms? Who do you got? You got coat hangers. You don't got much.
You got Richie James dropping balls, costing you wins
right.
Against Seattle.
What do you have? And if you franchise Jones, you can't, and Barkley walks, you can't even help. You can't even really replace him that much. So that's why I think he's more integral. He is the only offensive weapon. And I will close the pod and this conversation by saying this. Saquon Barkley is the Aaron Judge of the New York Giants. He is the face of the franchise. You walk into MetLife Stadium on a Sunday, yeah, sure, you'll see Sims, you'll see Taylor, you'll see Eli jerseys. 26. The amount of 26 jerseys that are in the stands, it out-trumps any other player, current or recent, other than probably Eli. That's it. It out-trumps OBJ, and he was a sensation here. People love Saquon. He is the face of your organization, and he's a model citizen, and he is, you said it, exactly what you want to represent your franchise. And he's also the leader in the clubhouse. He is the guy in that locker room that other guys look up to. He's the voice of the team. And you're going to let that guy walk? I said something about Jones fracturing the locker room with his contract. If you let Saquon walk, everyone else is going to be like, we don't trust this regime. We don't trust Joe Shane. And I know Joe Shane's a harsh negotiator. But that is a piece of this organization, and I think John Mara knows this deep down, just as Hal Steinbrenner did with the Yankees. You can't lose that guy. You can't do it. So that's why I would franchise him, just to give him another year to get a deal done and say, listen, we offered you 12. You should have taken it. Do you want and just get a deal done throughout the season, and you get more opportunities to do it next season. But he has to remain a Giant for this team to reach the potential. And I know it's a running back, and I know he's going to decline at some point, and that's just the life of a running back. I get it. But it's a deal that you got to do. You just got to do it. And you can fill in the I know you can't win without a good quarterback, but you can fill in for a while. Because again, if you let Saquon walk, what do you have offensively? What do you want? How is Daniel Jones going to succeed and live up to this contract if he doesn't have weapons to throw to?
They'll get him some receivers in the draft. I'll ask you real quick, and you can sign off on this. I know the contract I would give Barkley if you put a gun in my head. You, who remain adamant that Barkley needs to be a Giant, would you feel comfortable giving him a four-year deal, $13.5, $14 million a year? Is that, can you stomach that? I don't know. Of course, you know these deals are never guaranteed when it comes to running backs.
But yes, I could do
but
that.
Let's say a guarantee of $35 million if you want to go that high. That's pretty damn high for a running back.
Yes, I would do it.
I think you're absolutely insane.
I know.
I wouldn't give him Christian McCaffrey money, but listen, if the Giants went ahead and gave Barkley $13 million over for the next four seasons, I can stomach it. He's worth the compromise.
Where can they find you?
Well, you can find me everywhere, literally everywhere. But you can follow me on Twitter at Carlos with a K. The Carlos with a K show podcast is anywhere that you get your favorite podcast from. You also follow me on Instagram if you like pretty pictures and videos at Carlos with a K _.
Carlos, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Extinguishing the radio feud for 35 minutes. It's a pleasure, brother. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
My man, thank you for having me.
Hey kids, are those ancient records getting tiring in these troubled times? Finally time to get your ass off the couch and make something of yourself? Well, of course not, because there's yet another podcast you'll be recommended and not actually listened to.
Put on your fun hats, we're on our way.
You're damn right. All jokes aside, if you're a fan of the Grind Hours podcast with Joe Leo, you'll be right at home here. Want to know that the Ford Bronco is back?
Guys, the Ford Bronco is back.
Indeed, the Ford Bronco is back. Alongside those pressing news snippets, you'll get complaints about the Wilpons, Bobby Bonilla, and the New York Mets, as well as riveting life advice from the resident love swami, Nicholas J. Paradis.
I saw condoms in my son's plastic bag when we arrived at the house. Two packs with 36 each. Jesus Christ, dude.
Subscribe at your local podcast depository, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. New episodes are posted weekly every Friday. For our weekly advice segment, please send us a message over at anchor.fm/children's-programming-pod. We always look forward to hearing from you.
Joining me now is my former radio partner from WICR, Dan Barry Hattricks, announcer, PR savant. Chris Lynch joins me now. Chris, am I missing any title from you for the Dan Barry Hattricks?
Let's see. I do. Sometimes I do the public address announcing. Sometimes I actually, where the Danbury Ice Arena is hosting a motocross on ice event this weekend. So I get to be the public address announcer for a motocross on ice thing, which is
that
really
sounds cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to completely shatter the ice. And fortunately, we have one home game this weekend, which is a playoff game for our NA3 junior team. So, oh yeah, we're in the playoffs as well. So, you know, woohoo, let's have more stuff on the plate. No, it's so ludicrous and fun. So I'm not about to complain about where I'm at.
Do you ride the Zamboni too? Are you the Zamboni driver for the Dame Maria Hattrick?
No. I don't have that much time. Also, we have people who actually know what they're doing with that. But that's one of the coolest things I've gotten to do here is there's so much stuff that goes on. I have so much respect for the operations every hockey rink now. I understand why this sport is so much less popular than basketball is, because it's so much easier to maintain a basketball facility than it is to maintain a hockey facility. There's so much stuff that goes into it.
And you're doing this in Danbury, Connecticut. Imagine doing this in Vegas or LA.
Oh, or Arizona or right. like or Tampa or a place like that.
Well, Arizona, it's a college rink, so they're already it's already a second rate facility.
Yeah, it's an it's an abandoned Radio Shack by NHL standards. By a college facility, it's really nice, but by NHL standards, it's an abandoned Radio Shack. So depends on your perspective.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about your team, the Bees, your professional team, who are just, I mean, they're to equivalate to more of my audience, it's like the 27 Yankees. Like, they're just, they are murdering people. And it's not even close.
There's a real chance. I do fear that we'll have this great regular season and then foul it up in the playoffs.
That's my hope. As a Ranger fan who, you know, Patrick Kane, that's my hope. That's my hope with the Rangers and the Bees. But we're burying the lead. Yep. Our alma mater is the number one seed in the MAC tournament.
For the second Iona year Gales. In a row.
Yes. This year, revenge tour. Last year, we had a radio show. And what we said is, don't talk to us until the MAC tournament, because there were people on campus talking all types of mess that we're going to win a tournament game, not a MAC tournament game, an NCAA tournament game. We're going to get to the second weekend. Both of us went, whoa, 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 whoa. We're good. We ain't that good yet. And even after all of the success last year, beating Alabama, having an undefeated home record, I think we were undefeated in the MAC.
Yeah. No, we had a loss at Siena, and we had one embarrassing loss against Niagara. But for the most part, we were undefeated at home. We were 13-0 at the Heinz Athletic Center, which that's not the case this year. We have one loss, and it came against the same Rider team that beat us in the NCAA tournament last year.
Yep. I mean, it's a revenge tour season. I didn't want to hear anything about, and I've watched here and there throughout this season, and we will get to – I have three players on my list that are going to – if we're going to win the MAC, they got to play well.
Yep.
And it was kind of like last year too, but this team seems like they are hungry, seems like they're not satisfied with just – being the number one seed in the MAC tournament. They seem like, no. We're actually about to make the tournament. And that's my hope, not only as an alumni and a fan, but as a team that's covering this team. The only team that I see as a potential threat is that Rider team. And they're the number two seed in this tournament. So I was hoping for a matchup with St. Peter's just because my other producing friend who I produce with all the time, Harvey Cruz, went to St. Peter's. So just to have that rivalry a little bit more in the MAC tournament. But alas, they're the 10 seed. They'll face Rider if they win. We'll play either Mount St. Mary or Canisius. Tomorrow night, actually. Wednesday night. That'll be I'm working tomorrow night, but that'll be on one of the TVs in the studio. Harvey, I'm making that declaration right now. Doesn't matter. It's going to happen.
Yep. Yeah.
So, Chris, you were the play-by-play voice for this team for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about this year's team, and what are you most looking forward to in the MAC tournament?
Well, for one, they've done a really impressive job of throughout the course of the season. They didn't have Quinn Stasinski for a lot of the season, and they started experimenting with having both Osborne Shima and Nelly Jr. Joseph on the floor at the same time, whereas all year last year, you would only play one of those two guys at the time, and they would both play the five. Nelly has been asked to play more of a power forward spot, a traditional kind of Karl Malone sort of post-up power forward spot throughout the course of the season, and Ozzie has been playing a defensive, more-minded center role. And I think if that combination can really work in the postseason, because you have first-team all-conference performer in Nelly, who's – I don't know if they've actually posted. I haven't seen the MAC Player of the Year stuff yet. I know they posted the all-conference.
They posted the all-conference. I have not seen the MAC Player of the Year either. I know that Iona has four first-team all-MAC.
Like all different levels of like, actually the one that's a crime genuinely is Danis Jenkins being a second team
yeah.
all conference performer. Yeah. That's a crime. That why? I mean, I'll note very quickly here, not going to take that away from like Walter, because Walter Clayton is the best free throw shooter in the entire NCAA this year. He has the best free throw percentage at 94% of his free throws went down. And that matters because I will go back to forever and ever in that Rider game in Atlantic City. Walter Clayton had a chance to put the Gales up by two with the front end of a 1-1. And then, of course, you have the second one. He missed the front end of the 1-1 short before Dwight Murray went down and hit his spinning shot in the lane.
Which and was a travel. It
was a travel, but they should not have. It was, but it shouldn't have gotten there.
No.
Should not have opened that door for you to be there. And that part, the free throw, was in Walter's control. And he did look at that and did decide that he was going to do something different. And he did. And now he is, by free throw percentage, the best free throw shooter in the country. Not the MAC. Is the best in the entire country. He's a percent and a half ahead of the second place guy, which I think is a player from Stetson. So it's a great thing to see that you have a guy you can look at. Actually, you really have two guys you can look at and say, these are our closers on this team. Because you can give the ball to Walter and he can hit free throws. Danis is an attacker like nothing else. I mean, I love Elijah. I love watching him play. And Elijah could absolutely go into that sort of closer mode. I don't think Danis is quite the same level of pure point guard that Elijah Joyner was. But I do think that late game closer, I think Danis can hit some levels that Elijah, that even Elijah couldn't quite do so. And Tyson Jolly was not the closer of last year's team.
No.
He was the guy who would carry you through the majority of it. And I think that's the most impressive thing, actually, is how
he was the third leg of the relay.
Yep.
He would get you back in the race, but he wouldn't close the race.
Yep. But you know what? He did that job perfectly, and he was the most consistent player on the 21-22 team. The most consistent player on the 22-23 team by far, I think, is Nelly, because you know that you're going to get big post presence offensively. You're going to get a meaningful defensive presence. You're going to get a guy who's going to wear out the interior. This is a team that and they know, like those guys who were there last year, like Nelly and Walter and Ozzie, they know that they are eminently capable of losing in round one. And actually, by the way, I have to give some real credit to Mount St. Mary's, who's in their very first year as a MAC team this year. They made the jump over from the NEC into the MAC, and they gave some people real fights throughout the course of the season. So I think that, I mean, of course, you never look past any opponent, but like, if you get, I actually think Mount St. Mary's would give them a better fight than Canisius, because the two games that Iona played against the Golden Griffins this year, one by 30 and one by 21. So I think that Mount St. Mary's would give you a better game. And in a way, I kind of want to see Mount St. Mary's face it, because I almost want to see the tougher fight early so that they're in March and they know how hard they have to bring it.
Cruise control is not still in gear.
No. They've won 11 straight games, and you can't be comfortable. You cannot see that sort of being comfortable heading into Atlantic City, because comfort leads to disaster.
And if I'm Patino, I'm showing the last 2 minutes of that game last year.
Yes.
Against Ryder. And I'm saying, for the guys that are in this room that are still pissed off about this, we got to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And a note on Walter Clayton. Chris, I don't want to be like a broken record, but all year, last year, it was make your damn free throws. And that game was a microcosm of the entire season.
Not just for Walter, but for the entire
Iona. For the entire team. It was, you were up, you had a chance to put that team away for one reason or not. You didn't do it. And when you needed to make your free throws, you didn't make them. And this team is battle-tested from that, because Walter Clayton, Nelly, a guy we haven't even named yet, Barrick John Louis, who I believe, is a senior on this team.
Yes. Yeah.
He does not want his college career, or at least the college career at Iona, to end the same way it did last year. So there is absolutely some motivation on this team that I don't think necessarily was there last year.
Well, they went through the whole season last year, and it felt at points like there were a couple of hiccups. I was in the building in Albany when they played Siena and lost in a real close game, and Siena came out and stormed the floor afterwards in real happy celebratory mode. That was one of the points where, actually, part of the reason they lost, Nelly got 13 rebounds. He did not score a single point in that game.
Yeah.
Which was weird. Partly, Rick Pitino, for some reason, decided that he was going to not start Nelly. He started Ozzy and then brought in Nelly after like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, which I thought was kind of bizarre. But sure,
I mean, that could have been like a disciplinary thing. Who knows?
Yeah. But yeah, that could have been. But like, there were a couple of points where it just felt way, way too easy with the only a few hiccups.
I mean, this it was team, a fairy tale season.
Yep.
Last year.
I got the real cool opportunity to. I live in West Hartford, Connecticut. I don't live in New York anymore. So the easiest team for me to go see Iona against was Quinnipiac. So I actually went and saw the MAC Men's Soccer Championship when Iona lost in heartbreaking fashion against the Bobcats on the pitch. And I got to see them at Quinnipiac this season. And that was the worst game of the season by far. They lost by almost 30. Yeah. I talked to Brian Bayer after that game, and he just went, he's never seen Coach Pitino more pissed after a game than he was after the game at Quinnipiac. Which, by the way, you mentioned that Ryder is the team you fear the most. Dude, Quinnipiac has 20 wins this year. Quinnipiac dealt the Gales by far the most embarrassing loss of the season.
Right, but that's the same reason why you fear Mount St. Mary, because they're extra motivated to make a point that isn't the same team anymore.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen again. And if that's Patino's message too. If they go up and face Quinnipiac at some point in this tournament, they're going to go, we're not losing by 30. We might reverse the script and make it a 60-point turnaround and put 30 on you.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen the same way. But I do want to talk about somebody that we just mentioned, Nelly Jr. Joseph, because the man is averaging damn near a double-double. Like, can we just give some respect to Nelly, who I thought was very, very raw last year? He had points where he was coming into his own. This year, I don't know what he did in the offseason, but he committed to his game, and it is showing because he's one of the best centers in the country. That's how good he is. And
center / power forward, because he can play that spot as well.
He could play the four. He could play the old school four, you know, the Kevin McHale, mailman
McHale Malone.
Spot.
Yeah. Yeah, he can definitely do that. I mean, I'll just run through kind of quickly. 15.4 points on 50%, 55% from the field. 9.5 rebounds, has 47 blocks across his 31 games, block and a half. Actually, the block numbers are slightly down. He has 40 steals in 31 games and 30 starts. That's over a steal per game and over a block per game.
Him and Barrick were in the gym together because Barrick is the defensive wizard of this team. Yeah. Whatever, Nelly was like, hey, can you teach me some of those tricks? And they're paying off, man.
By the way, so that rebounding total, 108 offensive rebounds for Nelly Jr. Joseph. Second place on the team is Osborne Shima with 51.
Like, come on, dude. Like, this dude is a problem.
Actually,
a problem.
Let me throw one fly in that soup. He's a 63% free throw shooter.
Oh, well, that's better than Mitchell Robinson is.
Look, Mitchell Robinson hit free throws against my Celtics, but you know, we're gonna ignore that right now. We'll talk about that later.
He's one of the best players I've seen in an Iona uniform.
Yeah.
And his time here, I'm really happy for him. Because last year I was rooting like hell for him, because he was one of those guys that I knew watching this team day in and day out that if he needed to play well, if we had any shot at either at making the tournament. Mm-hmm. He right now, as good as Walter Clayton is, and as much as he can put it in the bucket, and same thing with Jenkins. Nelly is the straw that makes this, you know, that stirs the drink with this team. He yep. needs to show up and say, listen, guys, I got the paint. You guys go nuts on the perimeter. Nothing's happening at all for these four days. And we're going to go on and we're going to raise another trophy and put another banner in the Heinz Center. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, they have to. I mean, like, Nelly is that guy who will. It's so rare to get an athletic talent like Nelly, who clearly he will be a pro. Like, whether it's like whether his next step is the G League, moving on into the NBA. I hope that he can move on to the professional level. He just isn't a 3-point shooter at all. He's attempted 5 3-pointers all season. He's missed all 5 of them. That's just not a part of his arsenal. And like, if we were playing in the 90s, he would be one of the top picks and he would be one of the most sought after players, because that skill set was a piece that was really in vogue. His skill set nowadays is just plain old less popular and less useful in the way that today's NBA game is played, as opposed to what it was in even the early 2000s, or really when Andre Drummond came into the league in 2011 or 2012.
But he's more athletic. Like, he's an athlete.
Yeah. I'm not saying he can't like find a place or find a spot, or that creative and good teams can't like put him in the right spot. I just hope that somebody is creative and forward thinking enough that they can actually develop it correctly and that they can give him the right spot. Because that's so much. And this is something I've learned from being around college baseball. So much of your success in the pros is whether or not you go into an organization that actually develops people correctly. There were a bunch of pitching prospects who went into the Orioles system who just failed because the Orioles don't know how to develop pitching.
Times are changing now. Maybe
they're starting to, like, remember pitching prospects though. Their offensive prospects I've always thought were pretty all right, were at least decent to above average. The Orioles, like, they traded away Eddie Rodriguez, what sent him to the Red Sox, and then he became a top flight and like a real World Series caliber pitcher.
Yeah.
So like, that's just one. Thanks, Orioles, by the way. But but yeah, it just, like, I hope that someone can give Nelly a good chance because he deserves it. And he's an unbelievable, he's one of the guys in the running for MAC Player of the Year, and deservedly so.
I think he should.
Yeah.
And
he was one of the guys who was, he was first team all conference last year too, in his kind of raw or more raw year. Then, like, he was first team all conference along with Tyson Jolly, who won the MAC Player of the Year. And by the way, Tyson deservedly so.
Oh, he was. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Iona had 3 guys in Elijah, Tyson and Nelly that were all in consideration. I mean, all should have been first team.
Yeah.
And Elijah was in consideration for MAC Player of the Year too. Nelly, I think it's his award to lose. If he doesn't win this award, somebody is anti-Iona. And that's not just me, again, as an alum and now as a fan. But, I mean, and I've been chirping up Iona all week because everyone's like, we need some more local representation in the NCAA tournament. I'm like, hey, there's a team not too far away from the city in New Rochelle that can get an attorney. And I'm not saying this as, you know, jinxing them in any way. I said they could get an attorney. I'm hoping they get an attorney.
Yeah.
And if I'm anyone, if I'm on that staff, if I'm on Patino's staff, I'm saying not this year. We are not going home early this year. We're not leaving Atlantic City without some jewelry. We're not doing it. And that should be the mindset of this team. And I think it is, but I'm very, very excited for tomorrow night to kick off the MAC tournament. For Iona, it kicks off tonight, but they don't play. They got the bye. But
we'll wait until, like, I'll say again, I actually kind of would prefer a Mount St. Mary's matchup. I actually, there were a lot of people when Mount St. Mary's got announced as being the new team in the MAC that were kind of down on it or disappointed by the fact that it was Mount St. Mary's instead of a bigger school, who were hoping for that. But like, honestly,
I was one.
Yeah. But honestly, I think they performed respectably. Like, I think that they did enough to like merit, like, it wasn't a waste of a team coming in to into the conference. Like, sure, you would have loved to have had a bigger school, but at this point, like, you have to accept that the MAC right now is a one bid league, and like, you have to, your hope for progression for Iona is, you just have to hope that, like, you have to have a year in which you and Siena or somebody else who's at the top of the conference, or Quinnipiac, schedules so aggressively in non-conference play and wins enough games in non-conference play, like, that you both beat one highly ranked team and then a bunch of the St. Louis or Florida or people like that. You have to schedule that level of aggressiveness, and you have to win enough so that you have two teams who can make the MAC championship and who can make it, or you have to start looking at the possibility of moving out of the MAC into a conference like the A-10, which also means you're going to have to start scaling up your other athletic programs to be able to make the move into the A-10. Like, the men's lacrosse team is coming into existence next year, so that'll go some way towards helping that out. The women's lacrosse team has started their season already, and they look pretty good already. The men's soccer team just made the MAC championship, so they've got something that they can develop on. Women's soccer team has some real hope. The baseball team needs work.
Like, I was going to say, one team that's not getting us to another conference is the baseball team.
You need an on campus facility. Like, that one single thing is going to keep Iona out of being able to make the jump into.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
They lost. They're better this year than they were last year, but like, they lost their first 27 games.
I was going to say, I would hope so. They were dreadful last year. I mean, it was.
They were one of the absolute worst teams in the country. And that's a conference in the MAC where Canisius went to the NCAA tournament and gave Miami and Arizona real genuine fights. So, like, this is a conference. Like, they sent. I remember with the Brewster Whitecaps this past season, the starter for the Bourne Braves in game one of the Cape League Championship Series was from Canisius. He tossed six shutout innings against us. And the fact that Iona is so close to New York City and doesn't have like a real clear relationship with the Yankees that they could, like, the fact Mets. That they're not able, or the Mets or anyone, or that they're not able to, for example, go talk to Manhattan and say, hey, do you want to try and book playing a game at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field for the promotion of our sports programs or anything like that, and to give these guys the opportunity to play in a bigger situation or anything like that?
I take the Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium. Like, there's
anything.
But here's the thing. That's not going to happen from the looks of last year's team. It's not going to happen this decade. That's how horrible they were.
So, trust me, dude. I was the PA voice for Rutgers last year. They hosted Iona. I got a firsthand view of the state of that program. So, I saw it more than what most people will. But what gives me some hope about that is the coaching staff there. They have been and are continuing to work on trying to improve. And the athletic administration knows this can't continue if they are to make some real improvements. Like, the softball team has their own on-campus field, and they did fine. Like, they had a decent run in the MAC tournament last year, and they got a bunch of their pieces back. They'll have a run.
They were a fun team.
Yeah, no, they were fun. They were good. I got to call some of those games. It was a great time.
Yeah, I was in the truck for some of those games.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
We both had some firsthand experience with that softball team. That was a good team. It was fun.
Yeah.
But the baseball team. It was like
number
the black
one,
sheep. We didn't want to talk about them.
They play at a they play in an off-campus field at some other part, in like a local city park in New Rochelle. It's a turf field, though. It's like a nice actual, like, the field itself, the playing surface is fine, but it's not on campus, and the team just feels like it's not connected to anything. So what you'd have to do, and really, what I think the athletic department as a whole has to accept is that they have, like, their next fundraiser, like their next big fundraiser push must be for an on-campus baseball field.
Yes.
That piece by itself will bring more people into the program, because this program should not suck as much as it does. And it is an abomination of a program right now.
99%, if you polled 99% of New Rochelle residents and you said, where is the Iona College baseball field? They would have no idea what you're talking about, because nobody knows where it is.
Yeah. Heck, pull the Iona student body itself and a bunch of them.
That's 100%. That's 99.9%. The only people that actually know where it is are the people on the baseball team and the people like us that take it out of our day to go visit the field to have any idea where it is. It's oh my god.
And understand. Actually, so they're 2-7 right now. They actually won their very first game of the season.
Hey!
Look, dude, they didn't win a game. They won 6 games all year.
Yes. So. And I don't mean to dogpile on them, but they were dreadful.
Yeah.
Dreadful. For part of it, they deserve it. But it's not like I'm not rooting for you. I want a good baseball team. And guess what? I want a team on campus so that I can go in the middle of the spring and watch my alma mater play baseball.
Yep. Oh, I want that too. I would love to be able to see, because I think once you put that program, because that really is the one program that's hanging everything up right now, because everything else, literally everything else, like swimming teams, the volleyball teams, everything else, not just respectable, the facilities are actually on campus.
Yes.
And facilities are actually, like, you have the ability to really draw in some top flight talent. Of course, the basketball team, the men's team is the crown jewel. Women's basketball team also is a great shot at winning the men's.
Surprise this year.
Oh, dude, they had a great shot at winning the MAC tournament this year. Like, we could.
They also have an NCAA record for 3-point percentage in a game.
Yes, they do. They've been absolutely spectacular. So, like, this could be a great banner year for Iona to really make a statement and really make some good forward progress for getting it. I don't think, I'd have to go back and look, but I don't think that the Iona men's and women's basketball teams had ever made the NCAA tournament in the same season. I think, I'm not totally sure on that, but I think I saw that stat somewhere.
I don't believe they have. And I mean, this year is the best year out of any. And for the women's team, just make the tournament. I don't care what the seed is. They were very aggravating to watch last year, the women's team.
Yeah.
That's not the case this year. They're fun. They're fun.
That's totally correct. It just kind of, you saw that there were pieces that were there last year on the Iona women's team. It's like, okay, that could work, and that could work, but the pieces didn't mesh and work together.
Yep.
Now this year, oh man, it's great. Partly, if you're going to hit like 89% of your threes this game, of course you're going to win that one, because it's literally unstoppable. I just kind of wish.
It's an NCAA record, not women's NCAA record.
Men's, women's,
aliens, period. NCAA record.
Oh, dude, it was ludicrous getting to see all that stuff. I mean, welcome. I'll happily have the ludicrous.
Yes.
You know, that makes it more fun for me as a fan and alum of that program. I was just looking on at this going, man, you couldn't have waited until I was – you couldn't have done this last year when I was there, so I could have called this stuff. Unbelievable out here.
Chris, one more note and we're going to go to the professional ranks here. Give me one sentence on your Celtics and one sentence on your Red Sox.
Okay, so the Celtics are in their rough stretch. I think that they might make the Eastern Conference Finals the way they're playing right now, if they get lucky. And then they'll get swept by the Bucks, because Milwaukee is currently the best team in the conference. And I'm very not happy with my
they're a juggernaut.
They're the best team in the league. No, they are the best team in the league. And I'm very unhappy with my Celtics right now. And I'm hoping that they correct it, because I hope that I watched that Knick game, the playoff, the game that felt really like a playoff game. And I just went, Grant Williams didn't know what the play call was. Like, he, for the last minute of that overtime, they were calling.
What are you doing?
And Grant Williams didn't know what the play call was. I'm just like, oh my God, dude. And then the next game against Cleveland, Cleveland's going to hit two free throws and it bricks them both. And then Donovan Mitchell comes down and does.
He,
just like, dude.
For these two games, for those two incidences, you're on the bench. You're nailed to it for a while. You're not, you're done. Win my, if Tibbs was the head coach, oh, you wouldn't see him until June.
Yeah, I'm aware. I'm fully aware. Tibbs was my DC in the 08 10 years. So I'm fully aware of how Tibbs works. But no, so yeah, I think they'll get it corrected, but I'm just not happy with them right now. My Red Sox, I don't know, man. I don't expect them to be great. I don't expect them to be total garbage. I'm happy that Justin Turner didn't have any real serious damage, just had 16 stitches from a baseball hitting him in the face, so that's promising. Don't play him again for another spring training game, because what are we doing here? Masataka Yoshida looks pretty baller, so that's fun. Tristan Casas looks really nice, so that's good. I don't know, man. Like,
is Chris Sale on a bubble wrap? Will we actually see him play a pitch for an extended period of time this year?
I'll believe it when I see it, dude. Like, honestly, I don't.
You got a closer yet? Well, you got Kenley Jansen. But you got a bullpen? No,
look,
still
dude, maybe, I don't know. Like, dude, I just, like, with this Red Sox team, I look at their lineup. It shouldn't be a train wreck. In fact, the offense last year wasn't the problem. So, like, I think the bats will keep them in a lot of games. I'm hoping that Cutter Crawford makes the jump to being a real consistent major league starter, which if he does, then, you know, this could be a fun year. But, like, I'm at a point with my Sox where I'm like, I'll cheer, but I'll believe the real success is on the way when I see it. But, like, I look at the American League and I just go, no one's beating the Astros. Because, like, they're the best organization in the sport. For all of the banging on the trash cans, which I was happy to do, they won a legit one. And they are the best organization in the sport. They have the best scouting in the sport. And it isn't that close. And Daddy Steve in Queens can spend all of the money that he wants on getting top flight talent. It isn't going to matter if he doesn't figure out that. And the Yankees as well can spend all their money on Judge, and good on him for getting paid a giant pile of money. Former Brewster Whitecap after Judge. Like, I have so much respect for how the Astros have, across now three general managers, their scouting department is far and away the best in the sport. Even in their cheap year in 17, even in that, they had the best scouting department in the sport.
As much as I want to, and I hate them. I hate them almost as much as I hate your Red Sox. But
you know I'm right.
Yeah, you're right. And they're starting to change now for real the narrative around that organization. Because it was cheaters. And no one wanted to hear anything else. And then the pandemic happened. And everyone forgot about the cheating scandal. And then they got Dusty. And they're like, well, we can root for Dusty.
Yep.
The human shield that is Dusty Baker for a while. And then
And then Yordan Alvarez decides that, like,
he's a stone cold killer. Like, I don't want to see him. I don't want nothing to do with him in a playoff situation. Nothing. He is. I feel the same way about Yordan as I did growing up as Big Poppy in a playoff moment. I want nothing to do with you. I don't care. Goodbye. I'll deal with somebody else.
Who do you fear more, Yordan or Pena? Yordan. Let me just comment on this quickly. I think the most impressive transition they made was letting Carlos Correa walk, knowing and genuinely believing that they had Carlos Correa, or that they had his successor in Jeremy Pena, who they drafted out of the University of Maine.
Quick point on Pena. I saw him play in Double A in North Carolina.
I saw him play on the Cape. He played for the Chatham A's, and I thought, he's a nice player. He might get drafted. I didn't see him as being like a top level major league pick. at the time I saw him in the summer of 2017, by the way.
This was the summer of 19. He was in Double A.
Yeah, when you saw him. Yeah.
I didn't think, because I have, you know, kind of pessimistic glasses when someone goes, whoa, this guy, because I always look up, you know, where the top prospects are. And I looked up and he was, I think, the third prospect at the time. And I went, just because the Yankees, because, you know, Jesus Montero, Austin Jackson, I'm kind of scarred with top flight prospects going to see them in the minor leagues. So I was like, well, we'll see. He jumped off. He was the only player that I was like, okay. I said he could be a major leaguer, not what he is now. I said he could make the bigs.
Yeah.
Because he was that good. But, I mean, dude. Yeah. And they got Jose Abreu. But we're running out of time. They just upgraded Trey Mancini to Jose Abreu. I like Trey Mancini. You're not a former MVP. Sorry. No. We're running out of time. Chris, tell the people what you got going on, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Well, we're in the playoffs for the NA3HL, the junior team of the Danbury Junior Hat Tricks. We'll be starting up our series on Thursday. That's going to be live on Hockey TV, and you can hear me call round one of the playoffs on Thursday. For we win the series, then we go on to the division finals. If we win that, then we're on to the Fraser Cup Championship in St. Louis, which hopefully we get there, because hopefully I get to travel with them to that. The pro team has a game next weekend. We're going to be honoring some of the Danbury Whalers that we had, who won a championship here in 2013. So that's going to be pretty great. We've got the postseason on the way for that as well.
On this side of the coin, not the fake J. Leo on Twitter, jdowdysports.blogspot.com, and of course this podcast. If you've reached this point, please like, subscribe, share this podcast, and anybody who you seem fit. If you're new to the show, please download the show. It means more to the show than you know. Huge thanks to Chris, even though he got cut off a little bit there at the end. Huge thanks to Carlos for coming on and squandering radio beef for half hour. And huge thanks to you guys for listening to this. I know it's a long one, but long overdue. Haven't done a podcast in a while, so don't know when the next one will be. Gonna record a couple of them at the tail end of this week, so don't know when they're going to go up. So make sure that you subscribe, make sure you follow me on Twitter, again, not the fake J. Leo on Twitter. Got a couple of things in the works writing wise don't know when those are going to be out, so again, jdatasports.blogspot.com. Bottom line, just follow me, figure it, because with the schedule at ESPN ever changing, don't know really when I'm going to get the chance to record, but I do want to record. This is almost on an hour and 20 minutes. I have things to say. I just don't know when I'm going to get the chance to do them. So, again, podcast, definitely one recording later this week. Maybe one up on Thursday. Maybe. We'll see. Maybe Thursday or Friday. We'll see. Till then, it's closing time. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here. Peace.